Everyone, I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore living a longer life, and I'm going to be validating some new studies showing that information you've been given, and I'm sure dietary approaches you've taken, is actually going to extend your lifespan. They're finally catching up, and that's a good thing. We're going to look at how, if you have migraines, we can better understand why you're probably deficient in something. I'll tell you what it is. And insufficient vitamin D levels, that's not good for prostate cancer. I'll explain that. Zinc is linked with a better glucose handling of pre-diabetic conditions. Also, if you restrict calories, which we should, we have far too many calories in our diet, it's going to benefit you in several ways. Also, high triglycerides, not good, greater risk of fractures, and soy isoflavones can lower your insulin requirements and the bad LDLs. And there's a new laser treatment that's succeeding with prostate cancer. Doctors misunderstand the cancer risk of CAT scans. And also, a new study validates the age-delaying effects of something I've said you should be taking every day. Carnosine, and I'll explain how much you should take and why it could, well, it could be adding a lot on to your lifespan, and more. Then our audio file today, there's a big cognitive disconnect in the United States on both sides of the political spectrum and clearly in every aspect of the economic spectrum, and that is that some realities right in front of us, and we simply refuse to accept it for what it is. I'll explain in greater detail. You have a person who won the Nobel Prize for Peace, our president currently, and yet everything he's done has shown that he has abandoned that long ago, and there's never been one single day in the last 8 years where Barack Obama and his command, as he's commander-in-chief, of our troops not been fighting wars somewhere in the world. Bombing generally, Muslim countries, 7 at the current state, over 23,000 bombs. So why isn't that a part of his legacy? Why is this big wet kiss everyone's giving him on the liberal side as he leaves as if, oh, we're going to miss you? Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people in the world that don't miss a warmonger, no matter how much they like the smile. So we're going to have a reality check on that. Also, a European, German, highly respected journalist has acknowledged he was a CIA asset, and a lot of other people he knows are as well. And I'll give you the latest on that. And we're also going to have Glenn Greenwald sharing some insights today, and a commentary from Chris Hedges, Building the Institutions for Revolt from Truthdig. And I'm going to spend longer today, like a classroom on the air, about helping you not have a heart attack or a stroke. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. A new study out, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, network journals, shows that this is called the Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, found out that when you restrict calories, and if you're not obese, you're going to have a much healthier body. It's healthier for your heart. It's especially important for women. It helps not just keep their body mass index lower, but also is going to be healthier overall. And the less calories you have, the longer you live. So you literally restrict calories, live longer. Now, restriction of calories does not mean starving yourself. It means only have the amount of calories that your body actually requires in order to maintain your total health. From the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, a new study suggests that a woman with elevated levels of triglycerides, especially when they're in their 30s and 40s and 50s, have an increased risk of bone fractures. They followed 2,000 premenopausal women who had never had a broken bone, and they followed them for 15 years. And they found out that the women with a higher triglyceride suffered fractures, 200% increase over others. So the takeaway message here is that get your triglycerides down. And you do that by cutting out sugars in the diet. That's the best way. And if you are a sufferer of migraines, and millions of people are, you may be deficient, according to research presented at the 50th Annual Scientific Meeting of the American Headache Society, San Diego. They found that if you're deficient in several nutrients, you're far more susceptible. This includes riboflavin, folate, those are your two B vitamins, vitamin D, and coenzyme Q10. So you don't have to have a lot of these. Riboflavin, maybe you can take 25 milligrams. Folate, maybe 800 to 1,000 micrograms. Vitamin D3, 3 to 5,000 units. And that could substantially make a difference. And coenzyme Q10, 1 to 300 milligrams a day. And they found that there was a big discrepancy when it came to younger people. They're simply not taking their supplements. They're not eating a healthy diet, but they are getting lots of headaches, so that's one way to help them. And for men who have prostate cancer, the Journal of Clinical Oncology shows a study from Northwestern University that when you don't have enough vitamin D3, you can end up with a more aggressive prostate cancer. So you want the vitamin D3. Again, 3 to 5,000 units. If you have prostate cancer, you're going to need more. And zinc is linked to better glucose handling in pre-diabetics. This is published in Diabetes Research and Clinical Practice, found that supplementing with, you don't need much, 30 milligrams of zinc improved the ability of pre-diabetic men and women to handle glucose. That's a good thing. And there's a new laser treatment for men with prostate cancer. University of California at Los Angeles, published in the Journal of Neurology, talked about options for treating prostate cancer, including this laser. The process is called focal, that's F-O-C-A-L, laser, L-A-S-E-R, ablation, A-B-L-A-T-I-O-N. And it involves, well, simply the insertion of a laser fiber into the cancer's tumor, guided by magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, and then the laser-generated heat destroys the tumor, but not the healthy tissue. There's no serious adverse effects in urinary or sexual function, and they followed people for a period of 6 months. No problem after that. So, and this was presented at the annual meeting of the American Urology Association. So just one more thing to help you, one more tool. Also, according to the Journal of Medical Imaging and Radiation Sciences, many doctors and healthcare professionals are not fully aware of the cancer risk of CT scans, CAT scans, for patients. Research from the University of Canada surveyed medical professionals and found that 73% of doctors, 97% of radiologists, 76% of technologists knew that a single abdominal pelvic CT scan increased cancer risk. That, you know, how's that possible? And so don't assume that your doctor knows the danger of some of the therapies that they're giving. Clearly, they do not. Also, some new research talks about L-carnosine. Now, I've been suggesting you take L-carnosine for some time. I believe that for people in their 30s and 40s, they should be taking 1,000 milligrams. Most people take it too low. In fact, if you take too low, like 50 milligrams, that does not provide any benefit because enzymes in the blood rapidly degrade it. There is compelling evidence that 1,000 milligrams a day of L-carnosine, CARN, C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E, carnosine, will help you. And what's transpired in all these years, I guess I said 20 years ago about L-carnosine, thereabouts, is nothing short of a major scientific advance. Now, I've been invited many, many, many times based upon the human nutrition and behavior modification studies I do and the results. The latest one's just being done this week and will be submitted for peer review publication next week. It was a study I did this summer with over 500 people. And we had major improvements in diabetes, blood pressure, body mass index, meaning fat, and memory, depression, and anxiety. All improved. But we're talking about huge improvements. And so when you go to these conferences, you have a chance to talk with doctors. And all of them are aware of carnosine. On their top five lists of things to do, calorie restriction and L-carnosine. There are other than after that, NAD and resveratrol. But these are the heavy hitters. So new human studies are demonstrating broad-spectrum properties of L-carnosine that exceed even our original hope. And it also found that, for example, what happens when you take L-carnosine in the body, it protects tissues. Even in people who are diabetic who have a lot of problems with glucose in the tissues, it helps with what is called glycation, G-L-Y, glycation, C-A-T-I-O-N. That is where you have these changes to the blood vessels, the skin, the nerves, the heart muscle, and the brain. That then leads to premature aging. And it's especially important to protect the body against even temporary glucose elevations. So people walking around always with a sugary drink or a sugary dessert, you're really prematurely aging yourself. And especially having a high blood sugar after a meal where your glucose levels are directly related to your heart disease levels. In fact, elevated blood glucose leads to reducing L-carnosine in the muscle tissue, especially prominent in those with type 2 diabetes. So therefore, I would suggest going higher, probably 2,000 milligrams a day. In fact, there was a study, a placebo study of 12 weeks with 2,000 milligrams a day, and it was substantially beneficial, especially for those with diabetes or insulin resistance. It provides systemic protection. What's that mean? It means that throughout your whole body, there will help in your heart, your liver, your kidney functions, lowering your blood sugar, lowering your fat levels, reducing lipid oxidation. It does all that. And it lowers your inflammatory markers like your cytokines and glycation. It reduces glycation, which reduces damage to your tissues. And a really good study shows that added to kidney cells and culture, carnosine prevented the glucose-induced deposition of extracellular material that slows the kidney's filtration and cleansing function. So if you want to have healthier kidneys, better filtration of your blood, L-carnosine will do that. So it does these wonderful things, helps you across your whole body. And L-carnosine, by the way, is simple. It's composed of two amino acids that can intervene in any kind of these destructive processes like glycation. And by both preventing sugar elevations, good for pre-diabetics and diabetics, that's 100 million Americans, and protecting tissues against resulting glycation. So slow down the aging process, and they're really good for your heart. Carnosine has been found to prevent early oxidation of fats in the bloodstream and reduces the resultant tissue damage and inflammatory responses of your heart. So you want healthier heart, especially if you have congestive heart failure, then you want L-carnosine. And carnosine is a dipeptide. That means it's a molecule composed of two amino acids, beta-alanine and L-histidine. And they're found naturally in human brain, nerve, muscle, and other energy-consuming tissues. And one of L-carnosine's most important metabolic roles is to react with a variety of toxic molecules, including free radicals. So it helps to have L-carnosine if you're around any toxic environment. But what really is impressing to me is what it does in your brain. One remarkable result is in brain cells is the prevention of toxicity caused by beta amyloid. You've heard me mention many times this plaque that is laid down in your brain, which leads to dementia and Alzheimer's. You're protected from this protein when you have L-carnosine. It also helps to prevent the shortening of your telomeres. And your telomeres are the end caps of your chromosomes, and when they shorten, you age. The longer they are before they shorten, the longer time between shortenings, the longer you live. Well, you could literally add 15 to 20 quality years to your life if you just got rid of all the things you do that cause a shortening or speeding up of this telomere. Not difficult to do, not expensive, easy to do. And tomorrow I'll give you more on how to help your brain with one nutrient, a very important nutrient. But I'll get to that tomorrow. Now, from our continuing with our discussion of health and nutrition, I want to go a little further in depth today. I want to talk about rose hips. Now, most people never heard of a rose hip. And if they got all their vitamin C from rose hip, it'd be the size of an orange. So no one's going to do that. But you get the powder of rose hip. And according to a study from Lund, that's LUND University in Sweden, taking in rose hip powder, which is easy to get, you can get it in any health food store, may prevent weight gain. And this experiment it did. So that's good. And it also helps with vitamin C. Boston University has come up with a study. Good for them. It's a good study. It shows 26 markers in your blood that tells how well you're aging. Researchers have identified a set of biomarker signatures that suggest that you're at risk of age-related diseases or you're not. Quote, these signatures depict differences in how people age, and they show promise in predicting healthy aging, changes in cognition and physical function, and survival in age-related disease like heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and cancer, end quote. This was published in Aging Cell. They indicate that their analysis, quote, set the stage for a molecular-based definition of aging that leverages information from multiple circulating biomarkers to generate signatures associated with different mortality and morbidity risk. What's that mean? It means that what I've been sharing with you for decades, that every single thing that you take into your mind and body will have an impact, either constructive or destructive. And they have found these markers in your body that determine that you're taking in this which is bad, this which is good. You've slowed down the aging process here. You've speeded it up there. You took in too much calories. You took in too much fat. You took in arachidonic too much fat. You drank some alcohol. You shouldn't have drank the alcohol. You said you needed it. You were at a party. It relaxes you. That's all good, but it's killing a million brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, and heart cells with every drink of the average alcohol. So you're going to pay a price for it. You see, here's the takeaway message of all this. We now have the understanding that we can really turn around disease. We can turn around, stop in its tracks, and then repair the damage. But we must exceed the level of input that we created the damage in because we don't have the same time. If you find out at age 45 you have prostate cancer, it took you 45 years to develop it. You don't have another 45 years being very slow about it to change it. You've got to change it right away. So therefore, your energy has to be put into making only positive choices. No more compromise. Get out of your comfort zone. Get tough. Get into an emotional boot camp so you can stop being a cupcake and become a real person. Now, I don't say that to the younger generations. They're lost. They're gone. They're finished, as far as I'm concerned. I don't see any way that you're going to be able to turn them around. Some have not been compromised in their upbringing, so therefore they will develop as we did with all the existences of life. They will learn, they will fail, they will succeed, they'll be introspective, but they're probably 5 to 10%, 90% to 95%. They're not going to do anything that's going to be in their right interest unless they're accidentally doing it. There's very little intent to accede to a higher spiritual, emotional, intellectual, creative, social, political, ideological level of life. And so for those who are interested in a good message, you can change everything that's wrong. And if you do, you can live 10 to 15, 20 years longer in good health. And that's something that is worth motivating. And also, very important study. Oh, by the way, a small amount of zinc reduces DNA damage. That University of California, San Diego. We're not talking about much. And remember, we age when our DNA is hurt, altered. And zinc, according to the study, is essential in our immunity to promote it, reproductive health, skin, and vision health. But also, quote, now, scientists have shown that modest increases in dietary zinc, just 4 milligrams of extra zinc in your daily diet, could dramatically improve cellular health and reduce DNA damage. So that's good. That's real good. And the citrus flavones boost endothelial function and heart health. This is from the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Polyphenols from citrus fruit, oranges, grapefruit, lemons, and limes may counter the detrimental effects of a high-fat meal on cardiovascular health. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. So that means that if you've had fat in a meal, and especially if you've had like a cheeseburger, hamburger, french fries, then you can take a glass of orange juice. Grapefruit juice. I would suggest not orange juice, but grapefruit with some lemon in it, and it can help. The polyphenols will help counter effect so you don't end up with the devastation of that. And from UCLA, 2 key nutrients help stave off Alzheimer's disease. The omega-3 fatty acids and antioxidants like vitamin C improve the clearance of, quote, amyloid beta protein and reduce inflammation of brain tissue. How about that? So if we know that vitamin C and vitamin D, I would throw in there also, but the omega-3 fatty acids, which you get from fish, but you also get them from, and if you're going to have fish, there's only one fish you should have, sardines, and not West Coast sardines. Spanish sardines, Italian sardines, those are still all right. In any case, you can get them from walnuts, from avocados, from flaxseed oil. But that can help prevent Alzheimer's. Well, if it helps prevent Alzheimer's, the transcription of inflammatory genes, the mRNAs, increased in a subgroup of patients with low transcription at baseline, quote, our study is the first to show significant immune and biochemical effects of omega-3 fatty acids with antioxidants, there's your vitamin C, in patients with cognitive impairment. That's important. And from King's College London, a study reveals for the first time that talking therapy changes the brain's wiring. Wow, we never knew this. This is a new study. And it's shown for the first time that cognitive behavioral therapy, that's your conversation that I support, strengthens specific connections in the brain of people with psychoses, and that these stronger connections are associated with long-term reduction in symptoms and recovery even 8 years later. The findings published in the Journal of Translational Psychiatry are follow-up to another work. So the takeaway message is, we all go through times when we could use some help, when something's just not right, where we need to have someone that we can help us have a different perspective. Taking a drug, taking an antipsychotic, antidepressive drug will not help us. We need someone who is qualified, who we can talk with, we can confide in, and that will help us. So I'm suggesting that we spend more time, if we need that help, speaking with a psychoanalyst and someone who has a background in, let's say, in humanistic psychology, someone who is more compassionate, more understanding, is not there to judge us, is not there to write a prescription, but is there to talk with us like human beings. And sometimes it's just having someone as a sounding board, someone that we can relate to and share what's going on in our life. So, all good. And finally, I want to do a little more on heart disease today because there's a new study showing that if you have depression, you're now putting your heart at risk just as if you had an elevated cholesterol or other adverse fats in your body. Literally, depression is the new obesity for the heart. And this is from the Technical University of Munich. And they published an article in Atherosclerosis Journal. And here's what it says. Depression poses a risk for cardiovascular diseases in men that is just as great as that posed by high cholesterol levels and obesity. The report is very important because we have a lot of people who are depressed. And we're talking about tens of millions. And the normal therapy for that depression, if you go in to see a physician, is you're going to get an antidepressant medication. It does not cure nor reverse any depression. In fact, the side effects are severe. In fact, depression is one of the listed side effects of taking the medication. And when you consider that this is putting your heart at risk, now you can end up having a heart attack or stroke or other heart condition. So shouldn't we be dealing first with the idea that talk therapy, according to King's College research, is helping people with heart conditions better than drugs with no toxic side effects? But shouldn't we be helping the heart to begin with? And I say yes. In nearly every year for which we have records, heart disease has been the number one cause of medical death in the United States. In fact, according to the latest data from the CDC, more than 600,000 Americans succumb to heart disease every year. It is a much greater threat to women than men. And in fact, one in every four women dies from heart disease. And two-thirds of women who have heart attacks never recover fully. Over the past 30 years, more women than men have died of heart disease, and the survival gap continues to grow. So we need to deal with this. Why? Well, there's over 247 official risk factors that can damage the heart. And a risk factor is anything that injures the inner lining of the blood vessels that supply the heart with oxygen and nutrition. Any agent that injures this inner lining, such as tobacco, which also means marijuana tobacco, and air pollution, food additives, high blood pressure, even fumes that may be toxic, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, gasoline fumes, all that can initiate atherosclerosis, the so-called hardening of the arteries. Then the accumulation of such things as cholesterol, calcium, scar tissue, and fat causes atherosclerotic lesions, like a scab, which gradually go on to occlude, meaning block, the arteries to the brain and to the heart. And when the arteries to the brain, the carotid artery, is blocked, you have a stroke. And when the arteries to the heart, the coronary arteries, are blocked, you have a heart attack. Now, high blood pressure, also called hypertension, which affects more than 50 million Americans increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. And high blood pressure can be the result of bad diet, lack of exercise, high stress, being overweight, too much caffeine, sugar, alcohol, salt in particular. In the past few years, some reports have said that salt does not make much of a difference for most people. Well, if you're using pink Himalayan sea salt, I would agree. The fact is, however, that regular salt does hurt the blood pressure. Even a slight elevation of blood pressure is enough to increase the risk of heart disease. Among the more recently identified potential risk factors for heart disease are high levels of an amino acid, homocysteine, also high fibrinogen, which is a blood clotting protein, and a certain viral and bacterial infections, hepatitis, herpes 6, cytomegalovirus, Coxsackie virus, and an elevation of the C-reactive protein. That's a substance in the blood that indicates the presence of inflammation. It also is involved in heart disease directly. Now, other common heart ailments, some of which are precipitated by atherosclerosis, are common. In angina pectoris, clogged arteries leave the heart muscle with inadequate oxygen. As everyone knows, heart muscle, when exercised beyond their oxygen capacity, you end up with oxygen debt. You just don't have enough oxygen getting into the system. And when not enough blood flows from the coronary arteries to the heart muscle, people experience pain in the chest. And sometimes they feel pain in the jaw, the shoulder, or even the wrist. And often they don't realize that this is referred pain coming from the heart itself. And congestive heart failure is another common heart problem. Hardening of the coronary arteries can lead to a number of other problems. And when heart muscle tissue functions inefficiently, more blood comes in than is pumped out. In other words, with each beat, the amount of blood being returned to the heart is more than the heart muscle can handle. So fluid backs up, and other tissues such as the lungs and the legs can get congested. And congestive heart failure leads to shortness of breath and water in the lungs and swelling in the ankles. Now, I'm sure that you've all heard about the different signs and symptoms. Well, the treatment the Orthodox medical community provides us, in my opinion, is harmful, in many cases, unnecessary or overused in most of the cases. Conventional treatment of heart disease often involves the use of medication to address symptoms such as high blood pressure and cholesterol. And every year, well over 1 million Americans undergo surgery for coronary bypass and angioplasty, which is in which a balloon catheter is used to open clogged arteries to restore their hearts. I believe that the general public is being misled into believing that medications for high blood pressure are safe and always necessary. We all hear advertisements on the radio telling us to stay on those medications for life. They say that no symptoms tell you whether or not your blood pressure is high. Therefore, if you're taking medications for high blood pressure, you must stay on the medications and never, ever stop. That so-called public service announcement is really a sales pitch for the drug companies that make the medications. We know that these medications actually cause more heart disease and that they create side effects in addition to the high blood pressure. And we have to wean ourselves off that, or at least take a completely different approach. Now, let me just give you an example of how bad our medical community's information to its patients, especially women, have been. Nothing illustrates the problem of medication better than the debacle related to hormone replacement therapy. In the 1990s, many doctors began prescribing hormone replacement therapy to prevent heart disease in women. A Harvard study of about 46,000 female nurses had found that those who had taken hormone replacement therapy had a lower incidence of heart disease by up to 50%. However, when that study was more fully investigated, it turned out that the women with lower rates of heart disease were actually women who were healthier in general compared to the group who were supposed to have a greater incidence of heart disease. They were wealthier, more likely to exercise, had better diets, fewer of them had diabetes, and they smoked less. And the women who didn't take hormone replacement therapy were more likely to have diabetes and smoked and were poorer and didn't visit their doctors. Also not reported in the study was the fact that the women who took hormone replacement therapy had 50% increase in strokes. This, then, was a flawed, biased study. And the rationale for giving hormone replacement therapy to postmenopausal women was that when you arrive at menopause, your risk of getting heart disease or stroke will skyrocket, and therefore you need protection. Well, okay, understandable. But it was all wrong. Studies began to come in challenging the theory that hormone replacement therapy was beneficial to the heart. A study published in 2001 found that postmenopausal women with heart problems who took hormone supplements for less than 1 year actually had a greater risk of heart attack or death from heart disease than women who were not taking hormone replacement therapy. Now, an earlier study sponsored by Arist, the company that manufactures the number one replacement estrogen, Premarin, yielded similar results. They gave half the women hormone replacement therapy and the other half a placebo. And after 5 years, they discovered that in the first year of treatment, the women taking the hormone replacement therapy had a 50% increase in heart attacks. And over the 5 years, the risk decreased. And the conclusion was that women who already had heart conditions got no overall benefit from hormone replacement therapy. But this glossed over the horrible fact that hormone replacement therapy increased heart problems the first year. What was more, women taking it had 300% more blood clots in the legs than women taking a placebo. There was also a greater increase in gallbladder disease. And in 2001, the American Heart Association finally took heed of the growing scientific evidence and shifted its stance, advising against the use of hormone replacement therapy to prevent heart disease in women. And in 2003, a major government trial known as the Women's Health Initiative definitively linked the long-term use of combined estrogen and progestin as menopausal hormone therapy to be an increased risk of heart disease, as well as stroke and breast cancer. And as described in a 2007 press release issued by the National Institutes of Health, both the estrogen plus progestin and estrogen alone trials were stopped early because of increased health risks and the failure to prevent heart disease. Specifically, the estrogen plus progestin trial was stopped after 5.6 years because of an increased risk of breast cancer and because overall risks, including risk of heart disease, stroke, and blood clots, outnumbered benefits. The estrogen alone study was stopped at about 6.8 years because of an increased risk of stroke and no reduction in risk of heart disease, coronary heart disease. So that's just one example. Now, why do I share this with you? Because today, as we speak, in 2017, there are approximately 10 million American women still taking hormone replacement therapy with at least a 13% adverse effect, which means more heart attacks, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. So we're sacrificing about, just think of this, 1.3 million American women every year to a therapy that should never have been given in the first place. So what can we do in its place, especially if we're depressed and we want to not see our heart go bad? Well, first and foremost, I would suggest that the average American understand that their diet is way overloaded in total fat and calories and saturated fat and added sugar and sodium, refined grains, and deficient in all the fibers, polyphenols, fruits, vegetables, phytonutrients. You're getting way too much protein, way too much fat. And this is no longer controversial. I just finished a major film called Plant Codes that every doctor in the film had health problems. Nothing worked. They were all board certified. And they switched to a plant-based diet and reversed all their medical conditions. They then started beginning to use this on their patients with remarkable outcomes. So what do we want? We want heart-healthy foods, and a vegan healthy diet provides the kind of cardiovascular health program that the great Dr. Dean Ornish, who I filmed when he was originally doing his study, which is a landmark study, showing he was able to reverse heart disease and high blood pressure without drugs, without surgery, just with diet and exercise and stress management. You need a diet that is high in complex carbohydrates, whole grains, beans, vegetables, fruits, legumes, tubers. You're getting lots of antioxidants, phytonutrients, flavonoids. And flavonoids, by the way, are just plant pigments that are present in fruits and vegetables and in some beans and grains. They're very protective of your heart. And juicing is also important. So you're juicing, you're getting your chlorophyll, taking the supplements. You need all that. The phytonutrients, just in broccoli alone, in broccoli sprouts, are cruciferous. They help protect us against cancer. Collard greens are important. Beet greens, mustard greens, turnip greens, Swiss chard, bok choy, all are good. You'll start to see improvements in just days to weeks, especially with angina and with chest pain. And all these are rich in chlorophyll. The deep colors give us the chlorophyll. Citric acid, copper, glycine, iron, linoleic acid, magnesium, niacin, phosphorus, potassium, riboflavin, selenium, thiamine, tryptophan, zinc, they're all in a plant-based diet. And chlorophyll, for instance, helps purify the blood, acts as a great detoxifier. So you're going to exercise each day. That helps keep the weight down. That helps create endorphins, which helps your mood. It helps elevate your mood. You feel better when your body is flooded with these, almost like oxytocin, the good hormones, the love hormones. On top of that, you have to supplement. Exercise, supplement, eat a good diet, juice, get a good night's sleep, and check your thyroid gland to make sure your thyroid's working properly. So you want the B-complex. I generally suggest 25 to 50 milligrams. And for your heart in particular, the nutrients make a difference would be L-arginine. Now, L-arginine is an amino acid, and it's terrific. Just look up what it does. It produces nitric oxide, and nitric oxide benefits the arterial walls. It helps the smooth muscles in the arterial walls relax, promoting an anti-anginal and anti-hypertensive and anti-stress effect. It lowers the activation of some platelets, the small bodies that can initiate arterial spasm and plaque development. And L-arginine also slows plaque development and even reverses some small amounts of plaque buildup. It works generally 2 to 3 grams of L-arginine a day. And then L-carnitine, the heart muscle needs to burn fat for energy, and L-carnitine allows this to happen. L-arginine gets fat into the little engines inside the cells called the mitochondria. And these little mitochondrial engines are where fat is burned for energy. Your heart muscle needs to burn your fat for energy. And the only way it can get the fat into the little engine is with the amino acid L-carnitine. At the same time, that inner mitochondrial membrane requires another nutrient to burn the fat. Coenzyme Q10. So 500 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 is a big benefit to helping you, but so is vitamin E. They all work synergistically together. And then chromium. Chromium in the form of picolinate, P-I-C-O-L-I-N-A-T-E, has been shown to be beneficial for the heart and the blood levels. I think one of the most important nutrients for your heart is coenzyme Q10, and it is phenomenal for protecting your heart from angina and also regulating heart. Lecithin is good. Magnesium is absolutely the mineral for your heart. It increases blood flow by allowing muscles in the arterial walls to relax. It can also help correct irregular heartbeats, generally 1,000 milligrams a day. And then your essential fatty acids like DHA, and if you're getting the omega-3 fatty acids, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day, niacin, vitamin B3 in non-flush form, taurine. Now, taurine is a wonderful nutrient, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. It's an amino acid. It's another important antioxidant that helps prevent atherosclerosis. It also can help avert a heart failure by improving the strength of the heart's contraction, and that increases the outflow of blood from the heart and reduces congestive heart failure, generally 500 milligrams taken twice a day. And vitamin C. Vitamin C is crucial for a healthy heart, And it is the single most important nutrient you can put in your body. Vitamin E works. And also, I look at some additional nutrients like evening primrose oil is important, curcuminoids, olive extract, decaffeinated green tea. And the herbs would be bugleweed. It's a remedy for halt palpitations and elevated blood pressure. Cayenne, the capsicum in capsaicin in there is the active ingredient. Hot peppers and helps the heart. It stimulates circulatory function, lowers your cholesterol, reduces blood pressure, and lessens the chance of heart attacks and strokes. And by decreasing blood levels of fibrin, it also reduces the risk of forming blood clots that cause heart attacks and strokes. A super good thing for the heart is garlic. It helps lower blood pressure and decreases cholesterol. Ginkgo biloba helps improve small blood vessel. And hawthorn berries is overall one of the best, if not the best, herbal heart for maintaining regular rhythms instead of irregular rhythms. It lowers high blood pressure. It reduces hardening of the arteries. And motherwort helps stabilize the electrical rhythm of the heart. And wild yam stimulates production of DHEA. If you have low levels of DHEA, you're more likely to have heart attack. So these are the things that I believe can make a difference for your heart. I'm Gary Nall. That's our kind of classroom on the air today for preventing and reversing heart disease, especially if you have any form of depression. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us. Bring back some of that 1950s swing music. Now let's go to a reality check. Many of us are asking a simple question, a question that is a legitimate question. We are going to be protesting everything that this administration, not just president, but this entire administration does that is not in the public interest. It is my personal opinion that it is impossible for these people to succeed because they have never once in their life succeeded at helping other regular people. They don't know regular people. They don't communicate. They're in exclusive cabals and enclaves of the rich and powerful, just like the little dilettantes at Davos, disconnected from the real world. So if you've made your money as a vulture capitalist, and you're put in the position of running trade, how exactly are you going to bring trade back to America and jobs back to America if you're the one who goes in when a company's going bad and facilitates it going into bankruptcy and firing people? How can you help with the Department of Education if you're against public education? Your kids have never gone to public education. You have no degrees. You're a functional illiterate. And now you're put in head of Department of Education because you're a billionaire and because you believe in charter schools. Now, a given charter school may succeed or may fail, but they're for-profit or institutions that are subsidized by the public, and they're the preferred choice because you can make more money off of them. So that's who you're putting ahead of education. You're putting someone head of Treasury who has enormous conflicts because of their association with Wall Street. Every single appointment will be one that is filled with conflict by people who have succeeded by having other people fail. So do you think that these people are going to have an epiphany, a catharsis? They're going to have a come-to-Jesus moment and say, I've made all my billions by manipulating, using, playing the system, and now I'm going to do it on behalf of the people? Well, that's like asking a great white shark to become a dolphin so we can all go up and give it a hug. It's not going to happen. And what you're going to have is in this septic tank, this sewer of Washington, this swamp of decay and depravity with no spiritual values at all anywhere in this bureaucracy town of corporate interest, You've just added some great white sharks who are always following a nosebleed. So we're going to watch. But why weren't we marching? Why weren't we protesting when millions of people were dying around the world, being impacted around the world, having their children killed by drone attacks? Where were these people protesting when 28 million Americans were thrown out on the street with marshals ready to arrest them if they resisted? Where were our protests? Where was our anger? Where was our liberal rage, as hypocritical as it is, when you have 16.8 million hungry children? Where did you march for them? Now, let me tell you something, liberal community. If you can't find it within yourself to be outraged by 16 million hungry children who have no choice when they go to bed but to go hungry because they cannot yet fend for themselves in a world that you helped to create and you enabled this in the last administration or the Clinton administrations, then isn't it a little hypocritical that now you suddenly find your rage, you find your tears, you find your womb blanket to wrap up in? Why weren't you out there then? Where were you when our nuclear power plants were spilling fuel and a danger to society? Where were you when corporate America was getting subsidized on all of its losses, $21 trillion given, but not a single American's home was saved, nor even small businesses saved? Where were you when we did not have universal health care, but you supported Obamacare, a perverse, disgusting, despicable piece of crap? Where were you? Did you lose your sense, abilities? Did you lose your compassion? Did you lose your capacity for intellectual discourse? Did you lose your capacity to see reason that we need a universal health care? We need institutions that are not privatized? And that's all this president has ever done. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, where were your protests? When he endorsed the Dark Act, which allowed the Monsanto to no longer have to be diligent about it, it's showing what was genetically engineered, and supporting the pipeline, and supporting fracking, including fracking once again after the deep water spill in the Gulf, again, including opening up the Arctic. Where was your environmental outrage? Where was your concern? Where were the marches when the temperatures hit the hottest days in civilized history? Where were we protesting? Which of the Koch brothers' plans did you picket outside? Surely you did, didn't you? You did picket the number one cause of greed, avarice, hubris, indifference, immockinglish contempt for every American that the Koch brothers manifest with every breath they take. You were outside of their place demonstrating, weren't you? Or the banks. I'd like to go into every liberal's, corporate liberal and Democrat's pocket and take out their wallet. If you're in contempt of that which is corrupting, of its malfeasance, of its overreach, of its insensitivity, then why are you using their credit cards, buying clothes that were made in their factories, exploited women? If you say you're for women's rights, is it very specific and limited women's rights? Or is it all women's rights? And if you're for all women's rights, then where were your protests for the women of Libya, in Syria, in Somalia, in Mali? Or don't they count? Just some thoughts. Now let's hear from Reality Check on your president. You know, the peace president that you voted for?
26,171. That is the number of bombs dropped by the United States in just 2016. So where exactly is this happening, and what do those numbers really mean? This is a Reality Check you won't see anywhere else. Well, 8 years ago, when President Obama took office, he claimed he was an anti-war candidate. He was also given a Nobel Peace Prize for his words, but his actions have been drastically different than what most media will tell you. New numbers from the Council on Foreign Relations show that in 2016 alone, President Obama's Department of Defense dropped at least 26,171 bombs around the world. Take a look. Syria, 12,192. Iraq, 12,095. Afghanistan, 1,337. Libya, 496, Yemen, 34, Somalia, 14, Pakistan, 3. Those numbers are simply incredible, but let's put it into greater context. That means that every day last year, the U.S. military blasted combatants or civilians overseas with 72 bombs. That's 3 bombs every hour, 24 hours a day. But these bombs are targeting terror organizations, right? We're simply killing bad guys. That, of course, is what most media will tell you, but it's simply not true. In fact, those bombs are striking thousands of civilians in 7 majority Muslim countries. Consider for a moment that in 2016, 24,000 of those 26,000 bombs were dropped in Syria and Iraq, which means that 2,000 fell in Afghanistan, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen. So how many civilians are actually dying? Well, the Bureau for Investigative Journalism has been tracking civilian deaths for years, and they have found that the Department of Defense significantly underreports civilian deaths. Part of the reason for that is because in 2012, President Obama embraced a disputed method for counting civilian casualties. In those strike zones, combatants were redefined to count all military-age males as combatants, unless there is explicit intelligence posthumously proving them innocent. The U.S. government claimed that it killed between 64 and 116 non-combatants in 473 counterterrorism strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Libya between January of 2009 and the end of 2015. But that's only a fraction of the 380 to 801 civilian casualty range recorded by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. From reports by local and international journalists, NGO investigators, leaked government documents, court papers, and the result of field investigations. And that means that if correct, the U.S. government is underreporting civilian deaths by 6 times the actual numbers. So what you need to know is that today we find ourselves in a state of perpetual war. In the 15 years since 9/11, the U.S. has waged war in over half a dozen countries to end terrorism. And yet today, there are more terror organizations with larger populations operating in more Western countries than ever before. So if dropping bombs is the answer, then maybe we're asking the wrong question, because this war on terror only seems to be breeding more war and more terror. That's a reality check.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour something you will not hear anywhere else in the media, including any of the alternative media, an expert who will take you inside the CIA and tell you the truth about that organization. Have a nice day.
Everybody.